reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 6, Text Number 17. Tattastasascha jagatascha bhavannadisho.
Tattastasascha jagatascha bhavannadisho.
Yan maya yata guna vikraya yopanitam.
Yan maya yata guna vikraya yopanitam.
Artam dushanabhi Vishika patina lipto. Yenye svatha parhiritara pibhivyati sva.
Yenye svatha parhiritara
pibhivyati sva. Therefore, tatusha of everything stationary.
Cha and
Jagata
Mabha
Cha as well. Bhavan, you are. Adishaha, the ultimate controller. Yat, because. Mayaya, by material nature. Utta, raised. Guna, of nature's modes. Vikriyaya,
by the transformation.
That is, by the activity of the sense organs of the living beings. Upanitan,
gathered together.
Artan, the sense objects. Jushan, engaging with. Api, even though. Rishika Pate, a master of everyone's senses. Naliptaha, you are never touched.
Ye,
those who are. Anye, others. Svataha, on their own strength. Hari Haritat, on account of objects of sense gratification. Api, even, Vibhyati, they fear, Sma, indeed. Translation, O Lord, you are the supreme creator of this universe and the ultimate controller of all moving and non-moving living entities. You are Rishikesh, the supreme controller of all sensory activity, and thus you never become contaminated or entangled in the course of your supervision of the infinite sensory activities within the material creation. On the other hand, other living entities, even yogis and philosophers, are disturbed and frightened simply by remembering the material objects that they have supposedly renounced in their pursuit of enlightenment. Purport. The Supreme Lord Krishna is within the heart of every conditioned soul and guides the living entity in the pursuit and experience of sense gratification. The disappointing results of such activities are gradually convince the conditioned soul to reject material life and surrender again to the Lord within his heart. Lord Krishna is never affected by the futile attempts of the living entities to enjoy his illusory energy. For the personality of Godhead, there is no possibility of fear or disturbance, because nothing is ultimately separate from him. O Lord, the translation again. O Lord, you are the supreme creator of this universe and the ultimate controller of all moving and non-moving living entities. You are Hrishikesh, the supreme controller of all sensory activity, and thus you never become contaminated or entangled in the course of your supervision of the infinite sensory activities within the material creation. On the other hand, other living entities, even yogis and philosophers, are disturbed and frightened simply by remembering the material objects that they have supposedly renounced in their pursuit of enlightenment. So in this chapter, the demigods have approached Lord Krishna in Dwarka, and they are offering their prayers to the Lord, knowing that he has fulfilled his mission over the course of about 125 years. He has the purpose for which he descended, to kill, to destroy, to remove from the earth the burden of many, many, many powerful demons and their armies. So Krishna has done that. He has protected his devotees. He has established his devotees as his representatives, ruling the planet, and the whole, all of the universal affairs have been put back in proper order. And so the demigods, knowing that Krishna, having fulfilled his mission, is preparing to go back to the spiritual world. In fact, in one sense, they're saying to him that, please go back now. Your work is done. Your duty is fulfilled. So, we have called you for a particular purpose, and you have more than fully fulfilled that inconceivable purpose. No one else, of course, could do such a mammoth task. And the demigods were very, very. So, of course, this verse here is describing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in order to emphasize the greatness, the unlimited greatness of the Supreme Lord, there is a comparison to other living entities, ordinary living entities within the material world. Even those ordinary living entities may be considered to be the greatest amongst living entities, amongst ordinary living entities in the material world. Some are considered to be very, very, very great, such as yogis and philosophers and what have you. But even in comparison to them, they are insignificant in comparison to the glories of the Lord. The Lord has been, only the Lord could have actually come in and executed such a huge mission. Basically came in and cleaned up a huge mess. I remember one time I was on the farm, just to give an idea of the comparison. I was on the farm and I asked one boy to mop a floor. Not a big task. If you try and get in perspective, you know, how the difference between the Lord and the ordinary living entities. Anyway, the floor, of course, is a farmhouse. It had been there for many years of dirt on that floor. And the animals, a few cows and a few birds, had helped out, make a bit of a mess in there. So it was a pretty grubby floor. Anyway, I said, would you like me to show you? And I said, sure. I've been mopping floors all my life. Don't tell me how to mop floors. And I went away. I came back an hour later. And when I came back, there was probably about a metre had been done, and the rest of the floor, it was in the same state. And then I went and found this person, and, what's happening, He said, you can't mop that floor. That floor's impossible. He couldn't do it. He'd worn himself out. He'd done about a metre. And anyway, I said, are you sure I can just show you? Don't you show me how. I know how to mop floors. You can't mop that floor. Anyway, I did show him. That's one of the things you learn as a Hare Krishna, is how to mop a floor. And so I spread water all over the floor, which of course dissolves the dirt, and then it just very quickly comes off. Whereas if you sort of just rub it straight off, try to, you know, you waste all your time. So you just wet the entire floor and then you go back and start, and it just comes off like that. So it took a bit, didn't take long. But it just shows you, you know, the living entities in the material world. The difference, you know, between what we are capable of doing, even if you take the most capable person within the material world, still their activities, if you ask them to do what the Supreme Lord had to do, they would not be able to do it. They would not be able to come close. The task of coming in and sorting out, you know, all these extremely powerful personalities who had just, you know, were causing so much trouble in the world. Just like in, you know, we had trouble in the Middle East. You know, there were so many different personalities wanting to fight, wanting to cause trouble, wanting to kill, and for decades, hundreds and hundreds of years, you know, the best minds on the planet, with all the facilities available, have been trying to work out how can we stop these people from killing each other, and they can't do it. They're still killing each other like that. It's just impossible. Yet Krishna managed to do that, of course, sometimes by diplomacy, sometimes by political maneuvers, and sometimes by when all else failed, then just kill them all. Kill them by the millions, wholesale. And of course, no one can complain because Krishna is so powerful that who can? He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one can challenge him. And all those that did were obliterated. Yet, he was so kind, of course. Krishna is so kind that all those who were killed by the Lord were able to become liberated from material existence. So although the Lord came in and killed or caused the death of so many materialistic persons, demons, still he was very, very kind to them by awarding them liberation, freedom from all suffering. This is, and of course, that also is the potency, a testimony to the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As Krishna says, when Krishna says, Sarvadhamam parikyagya mamikam saranam bhaja ham tvam sarva papevyo makshayishyami matsuchaha, that just surrender unto me and I will protect you from all sinful reactions. So, Srila Prabhupada, in getting us to consider that statement, he says, just imagine if someone comes to you, maybe a friend or a well-wisher, and they say to you, don't worry about a thing, all your problems, I'll take care of them. Imagine it. Yeah, all the problems we've got now, everyone, we've all got, you know, different problems. And according to the worry lines on our faces, we can tell how many problems we have comparatively. Imagine someone comes up and says, don't worry about it, forget about it. All your problems, I'll take care of. That's what Krishna says, Sarvamam Parikyakya. You surrender unto me, I will protect you. I will protect you from all suffering, from all problems. I will deliver you like this. So this is, but generally if someone come up to us and said that, they can't actually do that. That's what we're saying. There's a lot of so-called problem solvers in this world. The United Nations, you know, has rows and rows and seats full of them. And, There's so many so-called problem solvers, but none of them are actually solving much at all, because there's a lot of chaos in the world. And we, you know, we have friends, we have relatives, we have, you know, governments. Really, none of them can solve our problem. Right? Even though, you know, we have our government, still all the citizens of Australia have so many problems. Government can't solve them. But Krishna, he says, I can solve your problems. I can solve all your problems. Don't worry about that. So that's, but not just for one person. So that would be, even if someone could actually do that for one person, solve all their problems for all time, that would be quite inconceivable. But Krishna is able to do that for unlimited living entities throughout all the different material universes, unlimited material universes. And Krishna is able to solve the problems within only Krishna. No one else can do that, but within each and every universe, the living entities who fall from the spiritual world, they create so many problems for themselves. And Krishna, in each and every universe, in his various expansions and his own original personal form, he comes in and he solves those problems. And the price for Krishna taking charge of it is, of course, to surrender to Krishna. That's what Krishna says: you surrender unto me and I will take charge of your problems. Surrender. What is that process of surrender? Krishna says, just always think of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances, worship me. Those four things, that is the surrendering process, to always think of Krishna. And to, of course, as Srila Prabhupada says, the whole Vedic culture is geared towards encouraging or drawing the attention of the living entities in this world to remembering the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Krishna. The whole Vedic culture, all the rules and regulations, all the sophisticated arrangements within social and spiritual orders of life, all of them are meant to actually draw the attention of the living entity to the lotus feet of Krishna. And if, as far as we take up that is the surrender, to always think of Krishna. But that, of course, is for a conditioned soul, that is not possible. We see here that in this particular chapter, the demigods have been praying and offering so many prayers in glorification of the lotus feet of the Lord. Confirmed. So, and they are offering many different prayers that if one takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, then the Lord's lotus feet, they're like a fireball, or a huge comet, like a fireball that just comes in and burns to ashes all the suffering, the suffering, of course, that is our problems, all the sinful reactions, all the material desires are burned to ashes. Of course, unfortunately, we've had the recently over the last weekend. Previously, there was the fire which came in. Of course, massive power. That's such fierce power that people could not comprehend it. And therefore so many deaths were there, because no one expected how huge and powerful a fire could get. And of course that fire, compared to the fires that can burn on this planet or within the universe, if it's just a, you know, just a tiny little sample. Actually, on the day the fires came through, I was at home reading, because of the Lord Nityananda's appearance day coming up, I was actually reading about the various expansions of Lord Nityananda. So I spent a lot of the day researching about Anantasesha, especially because I just received a nice Anantasesha shalagram, and about how at the end of the millennium he is sitting down at the bottom of the universe, and from his mouth he breathes out fire, which is so scorching hot, it scorches the entire universe, and it just burns the universe. And just everything gets burned, the whole universe, not just, you know, Marysville or, you know, everything. You imagine that fire, just massive. So, and then of course I was quite surprised, and you know, I'm sort of absorbed in, you know, meditating upon how the whole universe is going to be burned to pieces at the, you know, and then you look on the news and you find out that, you know, the universe has already started. Oh, so but when it says the Krishna's lotus feet, taking shelter of the Krishna's lotus feet is like a, you know, a fire that burns to ashes all the sinful reactions and all the material desires, you can imagine the potency, you know, how that, you know, that fire, how powerful that is. Those material desires, those sinful reactions, is, you know, so millions and millions and millions of lifetimes for Krishna. Is his lotus feet, they're like a fire that have that capacity. So the demigods, they're actually offering prayers that they be able to take shelter of the lotus feet and to serve the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this of course is the in their ecstasy of personally seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face in Dwarka. It has certainly intensified their usual prayers and their usual desires, and their usual devotional mood has become, you know, far more intensified, and therefore they're very, very strongly praying to have great attachment to the lotus feet of the Lord. And of course, that's that is what we call patasevanam, in the process of bhakti. We have shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnusmaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Sakyam, Atmana, Vedanam. Nine different processes, of which the fourth is Padasevanam, or worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, which is very much the mood of the prayers here. And of course, therefore these verses, just like the verse we're reading today, helps us to give us faith that yes, we're meditating upon someone's feet, but that person is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his lotus feet are inconceivably wonderful. So generally, you know, if you now this of course is very difficult for non-devotees to understand. It's almost like they might think we have a foot fetish or something, you know. So, what is this with the feet? That they, you know, they can't understand this devotion and attachment and, you know, overwhelming desire to to have any connection at all, even with a particle of dust that may have been associated with someone who was associated with a particle of dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. So, but therefore we have to understand whose lotus feet, that, you know, the nature of Krishna. So here we're describing Hrishikesh. Who is this personality whose lotus feet are so inconceivably wonderful that even great demigods like Brahma and Shiva, all the demigods, are glorifying his lotus feet. It's actually described in the prayers of the gopis that they would perceive that the demigods, when Krishna used to, he was herding his cows, and at the end of the day, around about 5 o'clock, he would come home with his cows, and the demigods, they would take advantage to come down from the heavenly planets and take the dust from his lotus feet as he, you know, they had that opportunity. Some of the different pastimes of Krishna, they may not have had access to, but there was an opportunity for them, and they would take that, well, here comes Krishna, here comes Krishna, and they would come down and just try and get a few particles of dust that had, you know, touched the lotus feet of Krishna like this. So, we heard previously that great yogis, sages, devotees, those performing, you know, various great yajnas, Vedic sacrifices, they all meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Yogis want to attain freedom from the illusory energy. They meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord. If they know how to be successful, they will meditate. All those who know that the secret of success, they will meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord. So this Hrishikesh, he is the creator, as described here, of all the senses, and he is the controller of everyone's senses. So every single living entity within this universe and within all the unlimited universes within material existence, all their senses are created by, owned by, and controlled by Krishna, Hrishikesh. So he is very, very powerful. There is no, in other words, when there is that degree of control, a person is so worshipable that they are fully in control, they are a superior. One must show respect. If one doesn't show respect to a worshipable person, then there is a reaction. It creates an offence by which there is some suffering as a result of reactions. Every living entity must worship Krishna. It doesn't matter whether one is a Hindu, a Muslim, an atheist, whatever race, young, old, every single person has senses. Someone cannot say that, I am a Muslim, I do not have to worship Hrishikesh. You say, well, do you have senses? Well, yes, I have senses. Then, the Lord of your senses is Hrishikesh. Someone says, oh, I'm an atheist. But do you have senses? Yes. Who is giving you the power to speak? Your atheism. Who is so kind? You have this desire to speak atheistic philosophy, and who is so kind to allow you to have a mouth to speak like that, that is Hrishikesh. Therefore, you have an obligation to worship him. There is no living entity. So he is, and because he is completely in control of all living entities within the universes, yet when he appears in the form of Krishna or in his various expansions, and people see him in a form where his senses, where they cannot perceive this inconceivable potency of the Lord, they feel that he is just like one of us, a conditioned soul, you know, just say that we'll see Lord Ram and he will be, you know, lamenting for the separation of Sita and, you know, shooting his, you know, bow and, you know, taking exile in the forest and so many things. They will see Krishna, you know, being naughty, stealing yogurt and feeding it to the monkeys. But still, although he has these pastimes, it doesn't diminish his position as Hrishikesh. But one should always meditate upon the Supreme Lord and understand that although he appears within this world, he is still fully in control. He never becomes that person. How is it possible that that person who is in control of all the senses of all living entities within all the universes, and someone could think, oh, he is under the control of his senses? He is controlling everyone's senses. He is that powerful. He is that all-knowing. That is his potency. Now, someone who is that powerful, who could be foolish enough to think, oh, he is also like one of us under the control of his senses? So in this verse, it is pointing out the inconceivable, wonderful position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hrishikesha. And therefore, his lotus feet are definitely worth taking shelter of. That is the point. His lotus feet, just by remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, one becomes completely cleansed of all material contamination. One becomes completely satisfied, and one is able to transcend material existence and go back to the spiritual world. So if we understand the position of Hrishikesh Krishna, and then we hear a sloka like that, or a verse, that, oh yes, he is the master of everyone's senses. Therefore, so much power, so much inconceivable potency does Krishna have. Yes, I can understand that if I take shelter of that supremely powerful Lord and meditate on his lotus feet, he is completely transcendental. Yes, my mind will become purified if I get shelter of that person. When he says, surrender unto me by thinking of me, by meditating upon my lotus feet, and I will protect you, yes, he's got the power to do that. That's what we should understand. If someone else says that, who doesn't have these inconceivable powers, then certainly you would doubt. Yes, why meditate on you, or any part of you, or anything you do? You know. But if Krishna says, you surrender unto me, and we can remember his unlimited potency, his Hrishikesh, then we say, yes, I can, just by meditating upon his lotus feet. So that meditation, that padasevanam, the demigods have been glorifying throughout here. Actually, in this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, they're glorifying two things: the nectar from the lotus feet of the Lord, which generally is we take it. We either bathe in the holy rivers. That is also part of Padasavanam, actually taking shelter below his feet. If you bathe in the Ganges, you bathe in the Jamuna, you take the Charanamrita, which is wash the lotus feet of the Lord. That is Padasavanam. That is taking shelter. And the other thing that the demigods glorify in this verse is the other type of nectar, which is very, very powerful, is the nectar which is taken through the ears, and that is hearing the glories of the Lord. So these two things are very, very powerful. In fact, the Acharyas say that you must perform Padasavanam along with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnusmaranam. It's not possible to take shelter and to meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord without Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnusmaranam. We see that it is in the Nectar Devotion. There is one of the regulative principles is that one should touch the lotus feet of the Lord. And of course, it's mentioned by the Acharyas that this, of course, is for initiated devotees who are fully engaged in devotional service. If someone is initiated devotee, fully engaged in devotional service, then they're permitted to touch the lotus feet of the Lord, the deity. Therefore, of course, when we have the festivals and sometimes we bring the deities out, we have to be very careful. Huge crowds of people, you know, all clamouring to, you know, get a little touch of the lotus feet of the Lord. But the brahmanas have to, you know, hold them back, keep their arms at bay, because it's actually an offence. One has to be purified, otherwise it's a great offence. It's like, you know, the Lord is supremely pure. He agrees to come to the material world to deliver us. He agrees to appear in the deity form. But still, he is God. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it's not that we should just approach him in a, you know, moochy, contaminated state within the mind or, you know, externally. It's like getting an invitation from the Queen. The Queen says, yes, come to my palace. And we turn up, you know, we haven't had a bath for a couple of months. You know, we've had a big meal, we've still got the sauce dribbling down our front. And, you know, you sent me an invitation, I'm here. You know, haven't brushed our teeth in a couple of weeks. Seeking, you know, hairs all that much. So, although one should touch the lotus feet of the Lord, we should be very careful, of course, that is for initiated devotees, and initiated devotees who are actually fully engaged properly still in devotional service. Generally, it's one of the last items in deity worship. After you've performed all the various items of deity worship, usually the last thing you do is you touch your head to the lotus feet of the deities, or you can take their dust, which is a sign. What you're actually saying when you take the dust or touch your head to the feet of the deities, you're saying, I surrender unto you. And that's what we should be saying at that. We can see that, you know, the lotus feet of the Lord, they're available, but one has to come to a purified platform in order to touch the lotus feet, and even to have the lotus feet of the Lord manifest within one's mind. That won't happen again. One may say, oh well, I can't get into the deity room, touch the lotus feet of the Lord, and the Lord come out and the brahmanas will hold me back. But the Lord's lotus feet are non-different from the lotus feet I'm thinking of in my mind. So in my mind I will touch the lotus feet of the Lord. But if one's heart is not purified by hearing and chanting, those lotus feet will not appear. You'll find, although here the demigods, great sages, glorifying the lotus feet of the Lord, and it is so, you know, so much available as what will solve all the problems, take us back to this future world, and within the course of 24 hours, you try and think of the lotus feet of the Lord, you see how difficult it is. So many things. What was that I've got to do? That's right, I was trying to think of the lotus feet of the Lord. And your mind would just wander everywhere. Therefore, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. When one becomes very expert in hearing, then they begin to chant. They chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. They begin to preach Krishna consciousness. If they've heard very nicely, then they can, you know, chant. And if the hearing and the chanting is going on very, very nicely, then they can remember. Then they can engage in smaranam. And when that smaranam is going on very, very nicely as a result of the hearing and chanting, then the lotus feet of the Lord manifest within their minds, within their hearts, and they can always remember and serve the lotus feet of the Lord and have great attachment to the lotus feet of the Lord. So Padasevanam, it's not just thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord, but it also includes other activities, practical activities. There are many activities included in Padasevanam, such as bathing in the holy rivers, and worshipping Tulsi, of course, because Tulsi is placed on the lotus feet of the Lord. So to cultivate Tulsi and to worship Tulsi is to actually worship the lotus feet of the Lord. to serve the lotus feet of the devotees, very, very important. It's actually described that Prahlad Maharaj describes in the 7th canto that if one does not take the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees, then they cannot develop attachment to the lotus feet of the Lord. So, and of course the devotees, they're always serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Circumambulating the temple, going to various temples to see the various forms of the Lord, travelling to the holy places. These are all part of saving. What is a holy place? A holy place is generally somewhere where the lotus feet of the Lord have been. And then it becomes. So therefore, he's called Tirthapad. Tirthapad. By where his lotus feet are, where the Supreme Lord's lotus feet are, that place becomes a holy place. So, going to those holy places, rolling around in the dust, serving the residents of the holy places, these are all in fact devotees are also described to be Tirthapad, because they're always those devotees who actually have purified themselves and can always meditate and serve the lotus feet of the Lord. Then the lotus feet of the Lord are always in their heart, so therefore they're also called Tirthapad. So wherever the devotees go becomes a holy place of pilgrimage as well, just like Melbourne Temple. Melbourne Temple is a Tirtha, it's a holy place. You know, devotees from Melbourne is famous all over the world. And Srila Prabhupada come here, Jayapataka, Devanagari Swami, Indrajuna Swami. So many great saintly personalities have come to this temple. And therefore it's a very, very wonderful, holy place within this universe. Even, we cannot see, but demigods would come here in disguise, unseen, to get, you know, because this is a holy place, a place where Srila Prabhupada appeared. Just like in London, when Srila Prabhupada was in London and they were having kirtan, and he was saying to the devotees, did you not see the Lord Shiva was there, the Radha Muni was there? And he asked them to, you know, set up a Vyasasan for them, just in case they came again. So the devotees, they also become Tirthapad. Actually, Narottam Das Bakur, he says that in Kali Yuga, it's very, very difficult to travel to holy places. And he recommends that it's probably better not to. And if you go, just stay a couple of days and go home. Because, one, people are very, very contaminated. They go to a holy place and they cannot appreciate, and they, you know, commit some offences, and they can cause themselves a lot of trouble. And it's very difficult to get there. They spend thousands of dollars, and you know, the austerities that may be there, it's very difficult. But if one takes shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, if one is actually always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord, or, you know, the lotus feet of the devotees, then that devotee is situated in a tirtha, a holy place. There's no need for them to go anywhere. And Srila Prabhupada said about Melbourne Temple, he said, when he was here, he said, you know, don't think that this is Melbourne. This is non-different from Vrindavan. Krishna is here. Tirtha, the holy tirtha. So these are different ways of padasevanam, to go to the holy places, to serve the lotus feet of the devotees. And in this way, by meditating and serving the lotus feet of the Lord, along with hearing, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, hearing from devotees, always thinking of the Lord, that must be there in order for padasevanam. If one does that, then one gets the that engagement in bhakti actually attracts the attention of the Supreme Lord. Krishna's lotus feet are very, very attractive. They're very beautiful, actually. And he is known as Madanamahan. He is the attractor of Cupid. Cupid is very proud. He is attracting everyone. But Krishna is the attractor of Cupid. And Srimati Radharani, she is Madanamahan Mahani. She is the attractor of Cupid. So Srimati Radharani is the very emblem of devotional service, which attracts Krishna. Krishna is attracted by that love, by that bhakti ras. And therefore devotees take shelter of Srimati Radharani, because they know that under her shelter Krishna will be attracted to their service. A couple of weeks ago we were talking about the glories of Lord Nityananda, that he is the original spiritual master, and that in order to attract the attention of Krishna or Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you must take shelter of Lord Nityananda. When one actually gets the mercy of Lord Nityananda, Lord Nityananda will introduce that devotee, the confidential devotees, to Srimati Radharani. So sometimes it is said that Lord Nityananda is the original spiritual master, and sometimes it is said that Srimati Radharani is the original spiritual master. As one's devotional service reaches a very, very, very confidential level by taking the shelter of Lord Nityananda, then Lord Nityananda introduces one to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to Srimati Radharani. And under the shelter of Srimati Radharani, one can enter into the very confidential service of Lord Sri Krishna. And Krishna is very, very attracted to that transcendental service under the shelter of Srimati Radharani and under the shelter of Lord Nityananda. Because Krishna is attracted, therefore, although Krishna is the controller of everyone's senses, but being attracted by the love of his devotee, he agrees to be controlled by that love. And therefore he is attracted to that devotee. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would say, don't act in such a way that you can see God, but act in such a way that God will see you. And to do that means to engage in devotional service under the shelter of the spiritual master who represents Lord Nityananda, and under the shelter of Srimati Radharani, who is also represented by the spiritual master. That attracts Krishna, and then Krishna will see you. So here the yogis, they're searching out, where is God, where is God, where is God? And Krishna is searching, where is that devotee who offered that flower with love? He is looking, always watching like that. That is the difference. To have God looking for us, that is better than, we are, look, where is God, where is God, where is God? Because God can always find us. We tend to have trouble finding him. But Krishna is very attractive. Therefore, you see, this is Bhakti Ras. We've been discussing this in the Nectar Devotion, that this relationship, mellow love, which is there between the Lord, who is tasting the sweetness of the love from his devotee, and the devotee who's tasting the sweetness of the reciprocation with the Supreme Lord, that bhakti ras, that is why a devotee under the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, they're not like the yogis who are struggling with the senses. For the devotee who has sheltered the lotus feet of the Lord, the senses are no longer like serpents. They're like serpents with broken fangs, with no teeth. Whereas for the yogis, it describes here that says, even yogis and philosophers are disturbed and frightened simply by remembering the material objects that they have supposedly renounced in their pursuit of enlightenment. Right. So the devotees, they're fixed up in bhakti ras. They're enjoying this beautiful reciprocation with the Supreme Lord. They're sheltered by the Lord. The Lord is attracted by their service because they're under the shelter of the Lord Nityananda. They're under the shelter of Srimati Radharani. Krishna agrees because they're under the shelter of such, wonderful, emblems of love and devotion. Then Krishna recognizes our service. That means they're under the shelter of the spiritual master, who's a representative of Lord Nityananda, who's a representative. Otherwise, as Prabhupada says in the Nectar Devotion, that without taking initiation from the spiritual master, in actuality, our connection with Krishna is never properly established. When one takes shelter of the lotus feet of the spiritual master, and by initiation follows the rules and regulations, the relationship with Krishna is established, because Krishna will recognize this devotee is under the shelter of the spiritual master, who is non-different from Lord Nityananda, from Srimati Radharani being their representative, and Krishna therefore takes great interest in that devotee's devotional service. That loving relationship is very, very sweet, and therefore the devotees, they have control over the senses because they have that higher taste. But the yogis, they don't have that. They're hovering on the platform of bhogacharg. Means they renounce, but because that's not the eternal living, the eternal position of the living entity, to be situated in renunciation, the living entity ultimately wants to get back to its original position of love that mellow, that nectar in a loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. Without that, the living entity will always be wanting. And even though the yogis situate themselves in renunciation, they're never satisfied, and therefore ultimately slight little thoughts keep creeping back in, you know, enjoy the material world like this. And then this life, that lifetime, then again somehow get entangled. We see that with so many great yogis, Devasamuni, they get entangled in the material world. But because sense gratification in the material world also does not satisfy that loving, eternal loving propensity, then again renounce. Bhogacara. Amrita Bhakti Rasa, it is eternal, unlimited, and is different from the flickering happiness of bhogacara like this. So this is the Krishna is attracted to the Bhakti Ras and the devotees. It is they're both. The Supreme Lord is also relishing Bhakti Ras. Bhakti Ras is so sweet. He is giving that taste of devotion, of love, to the devotees, which keeps them very much fixed up on the spiritual platform, but he is also enjoying it. Just like he is the controller of all the living entities, all their senses, he is fully in control. But Mother Yasoda should chase after God, she'll raise a stick. Hey! What are you doing, you naughty little Krishna? And she will pick up a stick. And Krishna enjoys that. Oh, here comes Mother Yasoda with a stick. I better run. And although, all living entities are trying to capture his attention, trying to search out for God, Srimati Radharani, she's thinking, Gopis, don't let that black boy come and see me. Don't let him near me. She's angry. And Krishna enjoys that. He enjoys being rebuked in love by Radharani and chased by Mother Yasoda with a stick. And this is the Bhakti Ras. So, the yogis and the jnanis, they're trying to, get some taste out of either material existence or, renouncing material existence or becoming one with the Lord. But they have no idea of the nectar in, these loving relationships that are available with Sri Krishna. And in order to taste that nectar, one has to, hear, chant 16 rounds, follow the principles, always meditate upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, and always serve the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And ultimately, gradually through that process, one day one will also be able to embrace and play with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the more higher levels of Bhakti Rasa. I'll leave it there. If anyone has any comments or questions.
You mentioned that Sandarshan is during the Anushyashi is during the annihilation. So what is the role of Lord Shiva and Lord Shiva? Has he got any role in
Anushyashi, from what I understand from his forehead, the 11 Rudras manifest who assist him to burn and destroy the universe. And there, those 11 Rudras are actually, they manifest from Ananta Sesha, but they're expansions of Lord Shiva as well. Jai, all Krishna Prabhupada.